Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you on board today. We're going to find out how fermented soy products are linked to a lower risk of death. The National Cancer Center in Japan says that, and we want to share that with you. It's published in British Medical Journal. We have about 9 really good stories to allow us to live a longer and healthier life, all from peer-reviewed journals, all from respected institutions, and yet you won't see any of this in the mainstream media. Then today, to help all of the good residents of New Jersey fight back, you've only had a temporary victory, just a temporary victory. They're going to come right back at you and try to get a majority in their Senate over there so they can pass the bill that you have no exemptions if you don't want to vaccinate your children. Religious exemptions will be gone. So I'm going to start something today by giving you as much information as possible to empower you. Dr. Lawrence Pavesky, one of America's leading, let's say, advocates for freedom of choice in vaccines, will give a 18-minute presentation that he gave before a committee. It is as good as it gets, so please take notes. Then, this coming Tuesday, my entire hour for all of the stations that syndicate this program and all the networks around the country, 19 different servers carry the program, I'm going to do the first of what will be a series of original documentaries on the air. Now, I choose not to show my documentaries in movie theaters. That's unless there's a special occasion. I'll do it, of course, if there's a fundraising. I did it. I must have done 15 for KPFK and PFW in Washington and L.A. Many, much more than that, 20 for WBAI. But outside of that, I choose not to put them in to movie theaters. I choose to look at the venue, at least since the year 2000, going directly to the public. For example, if you look at YouTube, the numbers are there. 7,300,000 downloads of the documentaries recently, so people are looking at them. But I want this radio audience to see why you should take an issue, empower yourself, have the facts at hand. This is all really good scholarship. If any of you have ever been to any of my premieres of my documentaries, you know that I don't waste words in a documentary. They're not meant for fluff. They're hard-hitting, honest, accurate, and empowering. So Tuesday, the entire hour, I'll do a live introduction. I can't play the whole documentary, but I'll play 55 minutes of it and then allow 5 minutes of people to call in and give their responses. Why? Because now they are going to mandate, they're trying, both at the federal level and at the state level, mandating vaccines for adults. So I warned you, did I not say 3 years ago, watch what they're doing, the children's mandated vaccine schedule, which has no basis in helping your child, no basis in science. It's meant to make profits. So now they're going to come for you. What are you going to say when you read what I will share with you from a bill in California, the same group of people like Dr. Pan out there and all the other people that lined up to get money from the pharmaceutical industry's vaccine manufacturers. And we reported on that. We showed you how much money each person who voted yes for the mandatory vaccines for children, how much they actually received. You talk about a pay to play, a quid pro quo. It was there. So what would you say if you realized you couldn't get on an airplane unless you could prove you had had all your vaccines, or a bus, or a train? Let's say you couldn't go to work at different jobs unless you first had all of your adult vaccines. What exactly would you think? What would you do if there were strong punitive actions and restrictions and punishment against you if you did not vaccinate? Kind of reminds me of 1932. Before the Night of Broken Glass, before the Night of the Long Knives, before the Browns, the Brown Shirts, Rome's group, there was taking away freedom of speech, taking away arms, and then taking away freedoms, making things mandatory. People actually had to come to a lecture of Hitler's, but they did the same thing with Mao and Stalin, and of course Fidel Castro. So what are you going to do? So this is information that I suggest you take note of, because there's going to be a lot of information that can help you and start to gain some confidence that you are going to be affected. You may not like being affected, or you may not care. I don't know. You'll call in later and tell me what you think. But that's Tuesday. And then every week for the next 10 weeks, I'm taking a day and playing a full documentary that's meant to empower you, to show you how much fascism through these oligarchs are adversely affecting our freedoms. So that's coming at you. So we're going to have Dr. Lawrence Pavelski today, and this is mainly for people in New York who want to challenge the New York bill, and it's also for New Jersey. And since we're heard all over the United States, all over the world, and by the way, I was told 2 million people went out into the streets and protested in Poland, and over 1 million in Italy to protest mandatory vaccines. So we don't have but a few thousand going to the streets. It should be more than that. Time permitting, we're going to continue our series on artificial intelligence, but we begin, of course, with the latest on health and healing. Now, fermented foods are very good for you. Historically, people didn't have fermented soy around the world, but they had kefir, and they had cottage cheese and sour milk. They had, in the Bavarian states, they had fermented vegetables, fermented beets. In fact, you could go into some of the Hofbräus, like a tavern, and there in the middle of the table would be a large, circular, spinning little serving dish, much like you would see in an Indian restaurant. But in the middle, there'd be all these different pickles. And then you'd have beets, onions, and other vegetables that had been fermented. They're really strong. I didn't like the taste of some of them. A little strong for my taste. But they're very good for you. They're loaded with probiotics. And that helped them. So fermented foods are extremely good, depending upon what the food is. So in this case, it's soy. And a higher intake of fermented soy products, such as miso, M-I-S-O, or natto. Natto is really bad tasting. It is bad to the bone, but it's very good for you. So it's the kind of thing you say, okay, I'll take some of this. I'll just hold my breath and swallow it down. But these are associated with a lower risk of death. And this was published in the British Medical Journal just today. The researchers stress that the findings should be interpreted with caution, as there may be have been affected by, let's say, other factors as well. In Asian countries, especially Japan, several types of soy products are widely consumed. Natto, which is soybeans fermented with a bacillus, particular type of microorganism, is called the Subtilis. Miso, which is soybeans fermented with the Aspergillus, and tofu, which is a soybean curd. They're all good, especially if they're non-GMO. So that's just the latest. It can help you with preventing heart disease, cerebrovascular disease, and respiratory disease, and all-cause mortality, meaning if you eat fermented foods, you're less likely to die from all normal causes, not accidents, but all normal causes. And they looked at almost around 92,000 people to get these statistics. Now, one thing I suggest to people all the time, black cumin, C-U-M-I-N, seed oil. New York Medical College and Tel Aviv University and the University of Catalina, which is in Italy. The black cumin seed oil have incredibly diverse benefits, ranging from reducing inflammation, helping in weight loss, strengthening the immune system, and even lowering blood pressure. In fact, a recent paper published in the Journal of Nutrition and Food Sciences found that black cumin seed oil exhibited a wide range of positive effects on obese mice in this case. So you can lower your blood pressure, You can lower the pain references around your joints. That's good for fibromyalgia in the muscles and arthritis, either osteo or rheumatoid arthritis in your joints. And you can also lower some of your inflammatory biomarkers and hepatic cytosis, mitochondrial biogenesis. All that can be benefited. But here's how you have to take it. Now, some of us just take a swig, like a tablespoon, and chase that down with something that softens kind of the burn. I don't recommend that for people. You get used to it. Instead, I suggest you put a teaspoon of black cumin seed oil into your smoothie. Therefore, it's less irritating. From Lubotshya University in Russia and the University of Bologna, which is in Italy, scientists have identified the role of chronic inflammation as the cause of accelerated aging. Now, this is known to all of us in the anti-aging field for a long time. The more inflammatory markers you have in your body, the faster your cells are going to age, the quicker the depletion of your energy factories, the mitochondria, the greater the number of damaged genes. To give you an idea, the average cell, and you might have anywhere from 50 to 100 trillion cells, depending upon your body size. That's trillion with a T. You have 10,000 gene alterations per cell per day. That's an astronomical amount of damage. Now, some of it is just a normal process of living, like oxidative stress. You breathe in, you take oxygen in. You breathe out, you breathe carbon dioxide out. The blood exchanges the oxygen in the lungs. The lungs give you oxygen coming in and carbon dioxide coming out. That's oxidative stress. The more you exercise, the greater the oxidative stress. The more stress you're under, the more oxidative stress. The more polluted your environment you're working in or living in, the more oxidative stress. It might be the formaldehyde in your carpet, especially those that are coming from countries like Afghanistan or Pakistan, where they chemically treat them to kill moths or worms that would otherwise start to eat away at the carpet. So they put formaldehyde in there. Clothing's the same way. There was a clothing store at 74th and Broadway, and I was down there because I lived on the Upper West Side, up on 89th Street, in a little tiny one-room apartment for a long time. And I would go down there because if I needed a shirt or pair of pants, I could get one relatively inexpensively. And every time I go in there, my eyes would burn. Now, of course, I did not know what I know today. And I wondered, why is it? And I asked the guy, does anyone else come in here, their eyes burn and water? He said, oh, yeah, yeah. I said, why? He said, well, they put formaldehyde in the clothes, so if they're coming from other countries, they don't get moths and get eaten, get holes in them. Okay. So just understand there's a lot of things in your home where you could have mold, brown mold, black mold. You could have mold in between your walls so you don't see it on the outside, but it's inside the wall, especially if your house has been damaged by water, like in flooding or tornadoes, hurricanes, where things get ripped up and water comes in, but then you don't see the consequence of that water. In moist places and warm places, that water can dry and a mold creates itself, and those spores can get through. You got to look at the carpeting. I remember in the 1970s, I'll bet a lot of you remember this, shag hair carpet. I think it was against the law that you actually cleaned it. I think you had to see how matted it would get, especially if you had dogs, and people would walk their dogs outside, especially in rain, they come in all smelly. And suddenly now they're laying on all the furniture. I had some friends that had shag hair carpet. And they always wonder, Gary, you're a little strange here. Why do you always stand? Well, friend, because I don't want the fleas and the lice and the mice and everything else that you've got hidden in your carpet and on your animal. Well, that's just not normal. Well, yeah, it is. It's normal not to want to get infected with everything. But I had two Afghan wolfhounds. All I did is I trimmed their feet, the hair, and then I just had a little pad of a disinfectant. They'd walk in the door of the apartment. They would step in that, disinfected them, dry them off. They're good to go. And especially the belly. People don't realize how easy it is to create infections. In any case, and I'll never forget the day I worked up on the third floor. I was the director of anti-aging medicine at the Institute of Applied Biology for 30 years. And all the other work on chemotherapy and orthodox, very orthodox, all supported by pharmaceutical companies and foundations downstairs. I was the odd guy out because I was doing stuff they weren't doing and didn't want to do and weren't interested in and didn't believe there's any benefit to it, health. But one day I walked in and I didn't see anybody. So I asked one guy. None of the scientists were there. They were all out. So what happened to everyone? He said, well, they're all sick. From what? I guess the flu. Really? So I thought about that. All day long I thought about that. Because a lot of them wear masks. So I went downstairs and I walked around and really inspected the whole place, all the departments. And then I noticed there was one bathroom, one restroom, and someone had just come out. And when I looked in there, there was no lid, meaning no lid on the toilet. So I asked, I think it was Elena, I asked, who was one of the top scientists there. I said, is that normal not to put down a toilet seat before you flush it? She says, well, there is no toilet seat. We thought for hygiene. I said, just the opposite. So that started an experiment. We got agar. And agar is what you use to grow out a medium in a petri dish. And we lathered the whole thing with agar. And then there was a apparatus for measuring viruses and bacteria. And it looked like a long wand. It had a light on it. And it would just digitally count this. And so I was upstairs, and I said, well, just the next time someone goes in to defecate, not urinate, and flushes the toilet, go in immediately after that, and just go up and down all the walls and around the whole thing. There are over 400,000 bacteria from one flush from a toilet seat left open, 400,000 bacteria, and I think 27,000 viruses. I said, there's why everyone's sick. Because when you're sick, you can shed viruses and bacteria. You can shed them through your nose, through your mouth. In fact, just to confirm this, I was looking up in the literature, and I saw where in Parliament they had brought in some form of opera singer, and they sprayed a non-pathogenic bacteria in his throat and asked him to get at one end of the hall, in the speaker's hall, and talk as an orator would, loudly. But they had placed petri dishes on every seat, and the next day they were all infected. All of them. Now, Parliament's a big chamber. The whole thing was infected from one person talking. So now imagine subways and buses. Imagine cabs. You don't know who's been in the cab, whether they sneezed or coughed, what was in their body. But it's alive. It's on the doorknob. It's on the seats. And we don't think about this. And then we wonder why so many people are sick, coming down with all forms of conditions. And especially once you've had your vaccines, because if you get the flu vaccine, you're shedding for the next 2 to 3 weeks. That's coming right out of your nose and out of your mouth. So someone gets vaccinated and you think, oh, good, you're vaccinated. That'll protect the other children who are vaccinated. No, because we found in one case, and you're going to hear Dr. Palfsky discuss this, every kid that was vaccinated came down with a vaccine-caused flu. Meaning the flu virus that they were using the vaccine was actually causing the flu. How about that? So it's very important to really understand hygiene. In any case, when it comes to aging, the more of these pro-inflammatory responses you have, you eat a hot dog, pro-inflammatory. Pizzas, pro-inflammatory. Something you're allergic to, pro-inflammatory. Polluted environment, stress. All this creates pro-inflammation, and that prematurely ages the cell, and that causes major breaks in the cell, and you get 3 or 4 more breaks in the DNA, not just alterations, but breaks. That cell's gone. Now, whether it becomes a cancer cell or just dies and is taken out of the body, and the older you get after the age of 30, you're now considered old. Old age begins at the age of 27. 27, you're in the aging process. Seriously, big time in the aging process. So by the time you're 40, you're old. You're biologically old. And that's something we have never told the American public because it would cause such a depression in people and anxiety. So we just don't tell them the truth of what we know. At least those of us in the field know it. So the key is turn off chronic inflammation before you allow it to get into your body rather than afterwards looking for something like black cumin seed oil that will turn it off. Just a thought. Now, something else. If you're going to have an operation, from Anadolu University in Turkey comes a study that preoperative Reiki, Reiki, it's an energy therapy, can help people lower their anxiety levels. And this was published in a major peer-reviewed journal. The results of this study show that the administration of Reiki is effective in controlling preoperative anxiety levels and in preventing them from increasing. Good. And finally, from the University of Calgary, low-calorie sweeteners, they're all the rage, like aspartame, do not mean low risk for infants. Many people turn to artificial or low-calorie sweeteners to cut calories and lose weight. And a new study led by Dr. Raylene Reimer, published in the high-impact journal Gut, discovered that the consumption of these low-calorie sweeteners while pregnant increased body fat in their offspring and disrupted their gut microbiota. The trillions of bacteria and other microorganisms that inhabit the intestinal tract and affect our health and risk of numerous diseases. Now, stevia is one that didn't do that. It's natural, it's healthy, has good properties to it, and it's 500 times sweeter than sugar. Oh, by the way, one last one. University of Mississippi published in the International Journal of Yoga. Yoga is now a part of complementary medicine and how yoga can support your mental and physical health. A whole study on this. Good for them down at the University of Mississippi for doing this work. So it's more than just getting, you know, flexible. You're increasing, promoting strength, endurance, as well as facilitating characteristics of friendliness and compassion and a greater sense of self-control. So that's what you can get from yoga. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going directly in to listening to Dr. Lawrence Pavelski for 18 minutes talk about why vaccine information is wrong. Mandating vaccine is wrong. If you want vaccines, fine. I've never told anyone not to get a vaccine. I just believe in freedom of choice. And I believe if you have freedom of choice, be smart in the choices you make by first becoming intentionally aware rather than intentionally ignorant. About 4 years ago, I coined the concept of intentional ignorance, meaning we intentionally don't want to know the truth of something because we're afraid of what would happen. It would change our perception. It would change our responsibilities if we knew the full truth. So we intentionally don't want to know the truth, at least not in certain areas. But what if we became intentionally aware? I want to know as much as I can about a particular subject matter because I want to be informed. So when I make my choice, I want to know the truth of the likely outcome of my choices. Now, what we have is we have a massive movement. They're not organized. They're not coordinated. They're not working together. They're in little small groups, the vaccine. Every one of those people is pro-vaccine until multiple or single damages, and then they started becoming intentionally educated, and then they were angry that the government, the agencies, the CDC, the FDA, all the leading spokespersons lied to them. And behind it all are these jackals, the pharmaceutical people who control and own the state and federal legislation. They write it. So I want the people not vaccinated to become aware of the truth before they vaccinate. Then if they vaccinate, it's their business. So doctor, this is the first of a series because I want people to know when you go back in to your legislators in any state to fight to have some freedoms, at least you're using facts. Now it's Dr. Pavelski on Tuesday It's a multi-award-winning documentary, Deadly Deception, on vaccines. Back in a moment. Stay with us.
NYU School of Medicine, graduated in 1987, finished my residency at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York in 1990, and did a fellowship at the Bellevue Hospital in the outpatient department. The first 9 years of my career were spent in ERs, running an intensive care unit, working in a neonatal intensive care unit, working inpatient in the hospital, working in a clinic, and then eventually having a private practice. In 1983, when I started medical school, I was taught vaccines were safe and they were effective and give them. But I was not taught about any of the science around their safety or any of the studies around how safety were done. And it wasn't until 1998 that a mother came up to me and said, "Dr. Larry, did you know that there's mercury in vaccines?" And I said, "No, I did not." And as a medical student, I was trained to critically think. If you see an observation, you go after it and try and figure out if there's a question to ask. So instead of just ignoring it, I looked further into the vaccine ingredients. And I found that there were a number of vaccine ingredients that in animal studies were proven to be very dangerous to animals. And I didn't understand why these same ingredients were actually in vaccines. I was starting to hear stories from parents, not dozens, not hundreds, but thousands of stories from parents who took a very healthy child into their doctor's office and then found that their child lost much of their health, whether it was their speech, whether it was seizures, whether it was death, whether it was asthma, allergies, eczema, whether it was autism, whether it was learning disabilities, whether it was inflammatory bowel disease, autoimmune diseases. And every one of those parents were told it had nothing to do with the vaccine, every single one. And this continues today. But yet when I look at the ingredients that are in the vaccines, I have the science to actually explain how these medical problems could be happening in these children. Today, one in five is learning disabled. In 1976, it was 1 in 17. 1 in 6 under age 8, 1 in 2 adolescents, and 1 in 4 young adults is diagnosed with a mental, behavioral, or emotional disorder. 1 in 20 children under the age of 5 have seizures. 1 in 40 develops autism. The number of cases of children and adults with autoimmune diseases is rising exponentially. It's one of the highest rising diseases in this country. And the vaccine ingredients, if you are willing to look at them and understand how they work when they're injected into the body, can be seen to be responsible for every single one of these cases. So what are these ingredients? Well, when I was in medical school, we were taught that the body has something called the blood-brain barrier. The blood-brain barrier is like Fort Knox to the brain. Elements of the bloodstream cannot get into the brain. And those elements include drugs, viruses, and bacteria, among other things that are in the blood. Drug companies were very concerned about being able to develop drugs to get the drugs into the brain. And so they used something called a nanoparticle. Nanoparticle, very small particle, bound to the drug. And they found that if they could put a nanoparticle onto a drug, they could get that drug to go into the brain. And it shows in animal studies that they were able to do this. They then were able to take an emulsifier which is something that's good with water and fat. It can dissolve in both. And if they added the emulsifier to the nanoparticle bound to the drug, they could increase drug entry into the brain 20-fold. This is right out of animal studies that I found. So you have a drug, you have a nanoparticle, and you have this emulsifier. The vaccines are constructed the same way. You have the vaccine viruses and bacteria that are bound to a nanoparticle called aluminum. And that aluminum is a nanoparticle. And by definition, a nanoparticle has the potential to enter the brain. Most vaccines also contain polysorbate 80 or sorbitol. Both of those compounds are emulsifiers. Emulsifiers bind very tightly to the nanoparticle aluminum, which is bound very tightly to the vaccine antigens. This raises a question. If the vaccine model is the same model as the model that the drug companies are using to enhance the delivery of drugs into the brain, is it possible that vaccine ingredients are making their way into the brain of our children that could explain why so many parents are watching their kids deteriorate after vaccinations, even though the doctors, the media, and the government say absolutely no connection, even though the science suggests that there is? You cannot find a single study in the literature that addresses whether the injection of aluminum into the body penetrates the brain, whether any vaccine ingredients enter the brain, and whether polysorbate 80 enhances the delivery of any of those ingredients into the brain. And when I could not find those studies, I was concerned. Because I'm told, you're told, vaccines are evaluated and very, very distinctly tested for safety. But yet, you cannot find a study that says, does aluminum stay in the get into the brain of children? Does aluminum take other vaccine ingredients into the brain that don't belong in the brain? Because when ingredients get across the blood-brain barrier that don't belong in the brain, they cause inflammation. And inflammation is what we see in 1 in 5 children with learning disabilities and 1 in 40 children with autism. And we have all you have to do is ask the guidance counselors. And if you get honest pediatricians who are telling you what they're seeing in their practice, they're seeing kids one after another with more and more brain disorders. Now, as a medical doctor who was taught to think, I then went into the literature and said, are proper science studies done, safety studies, where you take a vaccine and you inject it into 100 kids, and then you give 100 kids a saline placebo, meaning it's inert. No study exists to actually evaluate the safety of a vaccine compared to a placebo group. None. When vaccines are studied, the maximum amount of days that vaccines are studied are up to 10 days to 2 weeks. And unfortunately, the vaccine manufacturers pre-select what side effects they will allow to be associated with the vaccines. So if a child has a vaccine reaction that is associated with the vaccine manufacturers will decide whether or not it should or should not be associated with the vaccine. And the public knows this, and they're learning it more and more. So if your child develops seizures 5 months after a vaccine, your child is told by the doctor it had nothing to do with the vaccine. But that's not true because there are no studies to prove it. There's opinion, but there's never been a study really addressing whether a vaccination at 2 months or even 9 hours of age could be related to an event that happened months or even years later. And yet, we have some of the sickest children in our country. In New York, we lost the religious exemption on June 13th because the unvaccinated children with a religious exemption were blamed for a measles outbreak. When I met with representatives in New York, I told them that there is no study to prove that unvaccinated children have ever been proven to start an epidemic. And he was surprised. And he said, I will vote against removing the religious exemption if I can't find a study, like you say. He could not find a study, but he voted to repeal the exemption anyway. Because there are no studies. There are no studies proving that unvaccinated children are responsible. There's consensus. And here's why there's consensus. We are taught that vaccines stop the children from carrying the germs that we are vaccinating against. And study after study shows that children who are vaccinated can still carry the germ despite having received the vaccine. So, the vaccinated are still capable of spreading disease, but the unvaccinated are being unfairly blamed because of a consensus opinion, but not true science. To repeat, no study, no science has ever proven that vaccines eliminate the existence of the organism in your body. If anything, science is showing that the vaccines cause the organisms to mutate. And there are plenty of articles showing that strains are replaced by new strains after vaccination, similarly to the way antibiotics are bringing about new strains of bacteria because of the overuse of antibiotics. So why are we blaming the unvaccinated children? No study has ever been done in this country appropriately to address the health outcomes of children who are vaccinated versus the children who are unvaccinated. I have been seeing families in my practice for over 20 years that have opted out of vaccination. They are the healthiest children I have ever seen. I have families who have older children who have been vaccinated, middle children who have been partially vaccinated, and then younger children who have not been vaccinated at all. And those families are rising in number, and they see the difference between the health outcomes of their younger children who are rarely sick versus their older children who are getting IEPs in schools, needing medications, ERs, and constant health issues. And all I get when I hear that, when I state something like that, is, well, that's anecdotal. Well, it's anecdotal if you see it a couple of times, but it's not anecdotal when you see it for over 20 years, and when you speak to parents, and when you speak to teachers, and when you speak to guidance counselors, and when I speak to pediatricians who are too afraid to come out in public. There is pressure to ostracize the families who know the science and know the lack of science that's available. There's a lot of consensus. And when I think about the subject of vaccination, I want to ensure that if we're going to prevent infectious diseases in children, that we don't create something worse in its place. Unfortunately, we're dealing with a lot of beliefs instead of actual science. And beliefs go a long way. I took the oath of first do no harm, but when I look into the science and I don't see long-term studies, and I see only short-term studies up to 4 to 10 days where the side effects are manipulated by the manufacturers who are the only ones doing the studies on the vaccines. And when I see no placebo groups, and I see no studies of the single ingredients or the combined ingredients, and I see the science, the biochemistry of the ingredients in animal studies, where animals who are given the aluminum are found to have motor delays and behavioral problems, which is a great deal of what we're seeing in children today, I say, are we first doing no harm? And so, first do no harm means the precautionary principle. And more parents are understanding the dangers of vaccines, and that's why we're seeing such pressure to mandate vaccines, because more of the science is coming out. In order to create herd immunity, you have to be able to prove that children who are vaccinated are immune. And the sad part about that is that whenever you vaccinate a population of children, you're always going to have a population that doesn't develop any antibodies at all. The estimates of that are about 10%, that vaccines will fail in 10% of the population. Vaccination, no antibody production. But the next group is even more suspicious, because when you vaccinate and you do produce an antibody, there is science to show that the presence of an antibody doesn't guarantee immunity either. And we don't know the percentage of children who get a vaccine, develop an antibody, but aren't immune at all. We assume that if we vaccinate, we're getting protection. We assume that if we vaccinate, we're stopping spread of disease. Those are assumptions that have never been solidified in science, and I'm happy to offer more explanations during the Q&A. I wouldn't say that if I didn't have the science to prove it. The parents that I work with in New York, that I see around the country, are very concerned that their rights are being taken away, that their knowledge about the science is being pushed away by an agenda that only says unvaccinated children are a problem. Just to wrap up, in New York when we had the measles outbreak, I'm sorry, in California when they had a measles outbreak, there were 194 cases. Of the 194 cases, 73 cases were due to the actual virus in the vaccine itself. 73, 38%. 73 cases were due to the measles virus causing measles. All the literature states that measles virus infection is not true measles and should not be counted as a health threat. That means only 121 kids developed measles, 121 people. New York State did not do the proper testing that's given down by the CDC to test every child to see if the children had measles strain, wild type measles, or a mutated measles. There are cases around the country and around the world where in a 95 to 98% vaccinated population, they had measles outbreaks because they found mutated viruses. There, as I said before, there are cases where the virus mutates, where there are strain replacements. New York State did not do the proper testing of the 1,000 plus young children and adults who came down with measles. They wrote a little blurb on the CDC website of the two wild viruses that were responsible for the measles outbreak. But we in New York know that the testing was not done. 4,200 kids on Long Island had the religious exemption and were not vaccinated. And there was not one case of measles on Long Island. Thank you.
Okay, very powerful, very insightful, and a great deal of information that we need, you need, especially if you live in New Jersey, New York, and even all of you listening from California. You need to go back in. You need to reopen this. You need to bring lawsuits against the legislators by proving that they were influenced by lobbyists and money given to them, and bad science shared with them. We have the good science. We have the good experts. We have at least 20 people who have spent 10 to 20,000 hours researching this, and we will supply all that to any of the activists. All right? They won't allow us to come in and debate these people. We would love an opportunity to debate the pro-vaccine people. Not to humiliate them, not to, you know, it's not a blood sport. Rather, it's allowing our understanding of the actual scientific literature, not their opinions, to dictate compulsory control over our bodies. What do you think about the government? You know, this whole idiot thought of that, you know, that it takes a village. No, We're not talking about a village. We're talking about a bureaucracy. Now, the Clintons and other mindless fools say it takes a village of idiots, the government, and all their bureaucrats and technocrats, and behind them all the people pulling the strings and creating the actual policy, the corporate interests, big pharma, big military, big agriculture. And they should have more control over your life and your decisions than you do. What would you say? Would you say, it's okay, I don't mind. I don't care what you say. I'm going to go along with it. That's what's important. I want to know what you think of this. 888-874-4888 is our talkback number. You have an opportunity to talk now. Now, we're going to play another clip here in a moment that's important as well. And the real reason you should be afraid of artificial intelligence by Peter Haas, H-A-A-S. But I want to address one of our listeners. This, I won't mention the person's name, not that any of you would know it, but this is not usual, but when I get it, I like to give a reasoned response. This is a person who's been listening to this program for over 40 years. Good. And really likes the health information. Okay. But doesn't like anything else and believes I should do the whole program just on health. All right. Fine. So let's just say that all I did every day is come in and talk about fruits and vegetables and a Mediterranean diet, healthy diet, juicing. Nothing wrong with that. But here's what I would have to leave out. And mind you, think of the consequences of what I left out. Because today there's a cost that we all pay when we neglect everything else in context to a society, the political laws, the environmental policies, the climate change issues. All of this is a part of the larger picture. We should no longer distinguish what is healthy eating and living from the many other social, political, and environmental and global factors that challenge our health and well-being, our freedoms of choice. For example, I wouldn't have played that clip just now for all of you who want to know the truth about vaccines and what you can do to share with your legislators why you want that freedom of choice if I was just talking about bean sprouts. Remember, everything in life is interconnected. Nothing stands in isolation, including health and alternative medicine and nutrition. In fact, what if during the 1960s and 70s, when every single physician in America, Robert Giller, Stuart Berger, Robert Atkins, all of them, Dr. Rosenberg, all of them were under attack by the state medical board for practicing unscientific medicine, not because they were hurting patients, they weren't, they were helping patients, but because they weren't using just the techniques they were told and nothing else. We went to work. We went to work to try to protect those doctors and your freedom of choice with that doctor. Thousands of hours was spent. We had people in Albany, citizens, citizen activists. We did demonstrations. We wrote articles. We did many broadcasts. I must have done 100 broadcasts. In time, we actually managed to get laws passed in New York State and then California followed, Freedom of Practice Act. It would allow you to select a physician and with informed consent, whatever that doctor, chelation therapy, vitamin drips, ozone, whatever you wanted or the doctor felt would help you, you had a right to do it without fear that the doctor would be arrested and fined or imprisoned or lose their license, which happened to Carl Humiston, Dr. Vance, and so many others. That wouldn't have happened. Hence, if you went to a doctor after eating all your bean sprouts and chewing your food 300 times, until all you had was gums and no teeth left, and said, doctor, what am I going to do about my oral health? And the doctor said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Why not? Well, there's a political campaign against any of us using alternative medicines. Well, that's not right. I know it's not right. But I have one tooth left, and it's got mercury in it, and I'm told that mercury in teeth, I'm sorry, I can't say anything about mercury. Why not? Well, because the quackbusters say that there's nothing wrong with mercury, and I can't contradict that. Every day we challenge, every year we challenge agricultural chemicals like pesticides and herbicides, Roundup and dicamba. We challenge the neonicotinoids that are being sprayed on our crops that kill one-third of all of our bees, or more in some states. And as a result, one out of every three plants that are grown and harvested come from pollination. So what if I didn't talk about pesticides and abuses? What if I only talked about how many times you can chew and how to get rid of your hemorrhoids? You'd like that, but what about the bees? And what about, would you mind eating something that had pesticides on it, including glyphosate? Did a documentary on that. Did over 120 broadcasts. So GMO produce is important, but not to you, but to the rest of people it is. What if I didn't lead five demonstrations in the last 6 months on electromagnetic frequency radiation against the companies and showing you your computer, your mobile phone, your smart meter, your cell towers, all coming for 5G right now as we speak? Would you care that if you were calling me on your cell phone, that cell phone was beaming into your brain and causing brain cancer? Would you care to know that? Or do you want more information on how much fiber you should have to increase your peristalsis? Which is more important to you? The chemicals in your cosmetic. I'll bet you're using a lot of cosmetics, right? Shampoo, conditioner, people do. Nothing wrong with that. But what if we didn't do the original investigative reporting and I wrote the original book on it called Body Pollution, 1974. It was a bestseller. Took a year of doing all the research, but everything in there was found to be correct. And then I went out and debated the head of the cosmetics industry and the toiletry industry and showed them that they were creating, with knowledge of forethought, products that were toxic to our body. Hair dyes causing cancer. I was one of the first to write on that. Do you care about what's in your hair dyes or your lipstick or your toothpaste or toothbrush or mouthwash? I do. What about the hygiene products, the parabens? What about all those people who found out they ended up with cancer because they trusted Johnson & Johnson used talcum powder on their babies or on themselves? Should we not talk about that? I did 126 programs with a gentleman called Paul Rudishan. Why? Because nobody on a national level except myself on WMCA originally and later on WBAI talked about the dangers of Agent Orange. And we went into great depth about how over 3 million vets plus all the people of Vietnam had been poisoned with this defoliant. In time, that all counted because there was a acknowledgement of the government without acknowledging they were poisoned, but they were given $2 billion, had to spread. It's not much money, but at least it showed that we cared about them. The same was also true with Gulf War Syndrome. Artificial sweeteners. Do you care about the sweetener use or the food dyes or the processed foods with nitrites that cause cancer, the fluoride and chlorine in your water? The vaccines, and more important, the bills and policies that support them, the federal health system that is utterly corrupt, the FDA, the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, the National Institutes of Aging, the National Institutes on Cancer, all are manipulated and controlled by outside interests. The corruption of the medical industrial complex. Do you care that a medication you're receiving for high blood pressure could also cause your kidneys to fail? Do you care? Do you care that if you become anxious and you get an antipsychotic medication, you could now end up killing yourself? Does that matter to you? How about climate change? Have you done anything personally? I'm just curious. Since you're so interested in fruits and vegetables, have you looked at the fact that we have whole areas of the world where you can't grow fruits and vegetables anymore because it's too hot or too dry or too cold or too flooding? Flooding the contaminants of our water supplies with toxicants, an increasing likelihood of waterborne infections. Do you care that when you go to get a glass of water, that it could have over 100 different chemicals in it, including medications? Because it does. And what about the heat waves and the tropicalization that bring tropical diseases like malaria and dengue fever further north? And the warming of the planet, increasing infectious diseases, they're finding ancient bacteria and viruses have been frozen for thousands of years. Now, as they're thawing that out, these are becoming airborne. A warming planet increases the incidence of infectious disease, the loss of biodiversity and collapse of ecological systems and wildlife, the loss of honeybees and other pollinators, the acidification of the oceans and the rapid loss of marine life, poverty. I've done a lot on poverty. Do you not care about poverty? Do you not care about how poor other people are? Do you not care about people who have nothing to eat or too little to eat, that 16 million children are hungry? You want me to only talk about nutrition, but not what we can do if people can't even afford nutrition. Okay. Do you care about Wall Street and the Washington support elite increasing inequality and keeping health care and nutritious foods out of the reach of increasing numbers of people? Do you care about health insurance and a one policy that everyone would benefit from and nobody would go broke and nobody would be without proper health care, including alternative health care? Many people probably don't eat at McDonald's and other junk food places because it is their first choice, but other people have to because the food is cheap and they're hungry. Simply eating healthy foods and living a healthy lifestyle does not promise that someone will become mentally and spiritually empowered. Empowerment is a state of being, not healthy cells and organs. My God, the Nazis, many of them were vegan and exercised, didn't make them nice people. Think of all the people that you've been able to hear on this program who are not just healthy but nice. To desire to be empowered, important to have access to people who are already empowered so people can be initiated and inspired by the deeper source of their empowerment, which is in us as well. So then I shouldn't have interviewed Professor Andrew Harvey, Danny Sheehan, Jim Garrison, Chris Hedges, Deanna Burchford Kroger, the Tree Woman, Vandana Shiva, Professor Harvey Cox, the theologian of Harvard, Rupert Sheldrake, Joan Halifax, Rabbi Michael Lerner, Robert Kennedy Jr., Henry Giroux, Nancy Banks, Guy McPherson, Joan Borenschenko, Professor Robert Thurman, Dr. Mario Martinez, and Bruce Lipton, David Corton, and Beverly Rubick, and Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson and Ray McGovern. Many whistleblowers. I shouldn't have interviewed Thomas Drake and William Binney and John Caracollo and over 500 people in a series called Conversations with Remarkable Minds because it didn't deal with nutrition. It's all right to have your opinion, but this show will remain as it has for 53 years. The first call to truth on all issues interconnected to our planet, to the animals, to the sentient beings, and to each other. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.